Okay, I'm going to give you two other reasons that I'm covering the material regarding Paul and Christianity.
Okay.
The next reason is that, for example, right now I'm translating passages in books that I had really paid very little attention to in the past. I mean, if you read Yada Yada, Intro to God, Questioning Paul, if you read those books, one of the things you'd find is that you could count the number of passages that I translated from Chronicles and Kings. You could count them, or even Samuel, Chronicles and Kings. You could count them on two hands, maybe. Well, you could say I think it was only one proverb that I actually translated, quoted from. So one proverb,
a real big,
nothing really. I don't think anything from nothing of consequence from Samuel, Chronicles and Kings.
Yeah,
and that's where I'm finding myself now is other than the these three chapters that I've begun for Yahshua, Isaiah. No, I mean, my goal is to get through Isaiah 14 in time, but. So right now I'm in Chronicles, and son of a gun, not every time, that's an exaggeration, but with each discussion that occurs, and I'm learning just a ton because these are discussions between Yahweh and Dod, and the circumstances surrounding the creation of the city of Dod, the city of David, and then the threshing floor upon which the temple was to be built, and then the accumulation of materials for it, and the transition between Dod and Solomon, and Dod's proclivity to do some pretty dumb stuff. And it's just fascinating. In the midst of it, there's all of these profound insights that come from the participants in these discussions. And one of the things that just permeates out of it all is that God's got one family, one covenant, one household, one way. There is no way to know him if you don't know his name. There's no way to approach him unless you engage in his covenant. There isn't a renewed covenant. There isn't a new covenant. There's nothing in his Torah that he has annulled or changed. And so with every discussion, there's a repudiation of the most popular religion in the world. And with every discussion, here the lessons are coming from God's engagement with two rascals. I mean, Dod and Solomon were bad boys.
Oh, yeah.
But they were also extraordinary in their intellect and understanding of who Yahweh was. Now, the difference is that Dod had a reliant curiosity. Dod's curiosity was, I want to know what God said and understand what God said and then write songs to help others come to share the same insights into what God is saying that I have learned. So
yeah,
Dod's
greatest value right there.
Yeah, and that's what Dod did before he ultimately became a little too full of himself.
Yeah,
and so we reach a point with Dod where God's not even speaking directly to him. He's all communications with Dod go through a prophet named Gad.
Right.
And Dod's not even allowed to build the home. By the way, it's not called a temple, it's called a home. But these conversations are just extraordinary between the various parties, and they're constantly reinforcing the fact that God has a singular plan and that he works through flawed individuals to share that plan, and that he is never going to relinquish on that plan. Now, what you find about Solomon, what's interesting, is Solomon writes about his own experience. Solomon's intellect was every bit as great as Dod's, but his focus was different. Dod's focus was on Yahweh's testimony, understanding it, and sharing it. Solomon's wisdom was invested on sharing Solomon's experiences. In other words, Solomon was self-indulgent, every bit as smart as his father. But God still had a marvelous relationship with Solomon, just as he did with Dode. And in listening to what is being said, everything that we have come to know about the covenant, about Yahweh, about God's family, what he is offering us, what he wants us to reject, what he wants us to accept, it's just all reinforced all the way through. And so the repudiation of the world's most influential religion and most popular religion exists all the way through that material. So that's the fifth reason. I'm going to give you a sixth. I can't help myself. I was an ordained ruling elder in the Presbyterian Church. I was a trained evangelist. I led Bible studies. I was the keynote speaker at the Presbyterian's Church's National Assembly. I was a Christian up to my eyeballs. And I have subsequently learned that the religion that I once believed is a complete and utter fraud, that it is worse than being useless. It's a plague of death. And when I think of all of the frauds, you look at Baylor University now, the largest Baptist school in the country, and the hypocrisy that oozes out of that place, and the hypocrisy that just emanates from all Christians. It makes me sick.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me angry. And it makes me angry that you've got a 1.2 billion Roman Catholics in the world today, and how they're just swooning over this piece of crap, Bergoglio, that's their pope. It makes me angry. It makes God angry. And, you know, one of the things that I have learned from Yahweh, and it puts me in a very different position than the rest of the world,
mm-hmm.
is that our problem isn't that we hate. It's we don't hate enough.
Mm-hmm. And we don't hate the right people.
Right. If you don't hate institutions that are deceptive and debilitating and counterproductive and that are inspiring horrid behaviors and horrid conclusions in terms of influence on people's lives. If you don't hate that kind of thing, there's something wrong with you. Then you're not moral. Then you're not reasonable. Then you're not being just. You're not being compassionate. And so God hates them. And I hate them. And, you know, there are times, in fact, God is really clear about this. The people that he likes stand up against what he disapproves of. That's one of the things about Dode that was so daggone good, is that Dode says, you know, I hate my enemies. You know, this is what they say, and this is why I despise them. Not a lot of people that are willing to bow their back and stand up against evil. And so if we don't, who will?
Yeah.
You know, I just received a letter from a fellow down in South America saying, you know, what's your take on the political scene in America right now? Mm-hmm. You know, my response was, I think it's the four worst candidates that America's ever fielded. And that that while I disagree with almost everything Trump says and wants to do, you know, he's the least objectionable of the four. Now, I'm not voting for him. I'm not going to endorse him. I disagree with almost everything he says and almost everything he wants to accomplish. I'm in opposition to. I know for a fact he is wrong. And yet he's the best of a bad lot. That's how bad the situation is.
What does that say about him?
Right. I was reading an article just before the show began. It was on France, a holiday, telling the world that Israel must accept a two-state solution. And you read that and you say, well, first of all, why would you equate two-state and solution?
Yeah.
When the Muslims were given Gaza, what did that solve?
Absolutely nothing. It made it worse.
Of course.
horrible.
You know, Syria was divided between the city-state of Damascus, the Assad regime, and the Islamic State. How did that solve anything?
It has done nothing.
Right. You know, we have a three-state solution now in Iraq. You have Iran West in Baghdad and the Shia areas. You've got the Islamic State and Mosul and elsewhere, and then you've got the Kurds. Now you've got a three-state solution. Why isn't anybody touting the three-state solution in Iraq? Or the two-state solution in Syria? Or the 100-state solution in Libya? You know, Libya's gone from a military dictatorship under Gaddafi to tribal jihadists. Right, right. So you've got a 100-state solution there. How'd that work? You know, they finally gave the animists and Christians in the south of Sudan their own state. Two-state solution, man. You got the Muslims in the north. You've got, of course, the African Muslims in the east of Sudan. They're still getting pummeled to some degree. But in the south, the animists and Christians, they've been ruthless barbarians. How did that two-state solution work there? And if by giving the Muslims Gaza created a perpetual state of war with Israel, why would giving the West Bank, which would isolate Tel Aviv and Jerusalem and the swath of land where 70% of Israelites live, so that you know they're going to live in a zone that's 10 miles wide. How is that going to do anything but be instantly suicidal?
Well, I would say to you, who is so arrogant that they think that they have the right to tell somebody what to give up of their own country?
Who gave Israel?
Living in Israel. I mean, well, who the hell are you?
Yeah, who gave Israel to the Israelites?
George Bush. I'm sorry, God gave Israel to Israelites.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about the...
So what man has the right to take what God gave?
Yeah, nobody.
Okay, then you look at the other side. You've got people calling themselves Palestinians. Is there anything such thing as a Palestinian?
No, that's absurd.
When did the last Palestinian live?
3,200 years ago, maybe.
Well, certainly 2,600.
At least 2,600. Time, and then they all get wiped out.
Dode's time. They were around in Dode's time, and they were just a militaristic, uncouth, vicious group of people. Probably Phoenicians, in all likelihood, just like the Carthaginians were Phoenicians.
Yeah, Carthaginians.
In all likelihood, the Philistines were a particularly uncouth, uncivil version of Phoenicians. You know, the difference were the Phoenicians fairly sophisticated society, very literate, and the Carthaginians continued with the Phoenician alphabet and the Phoenician language, and continued the Phoenician prowess in terms of navy and trade. But the so-called Philistines, they were only good at one thing.
Yeah, just kill.
Yeah, making weapons and harassing
Raiders.
People.
And just Raiders,
right. And so they are the ultimate enemy of Israel, and therefore an enemy of God. And the Assyrians and the Babylonians, in their pursuit of the Egyptians, they could care less about the Philistines. Yeah. But they wiped out the last of them, 500-600 BCE. There hasn't been a single one since for 2,500 years. Not one. And even beyond that, there is no legacy of them. There is nothing known about them. No one knows what they called themselves. Nothing. No one knows what language they spoke. There isn't a single...
Historians know that. Why?
Yeah. Right. So there isn't... The only reason we even know about a peoples that were called, not who called themselves, who were called the Philistines, which means terrorists who invade. The only reason we know anything about them, the only reason the name is known, is because of what is said about them in these books that we're now considering, and particularly in Samuel. That is why we know about them. If it wasn't for Yahweh's prophets speaking of them, nothing would be known about them. So for somebody to call themselves that, the name is derived entirely from a document that says you're foreign invaders who were terrorists. And the last of that group of people, in terms of being the actual people themselves, the actual nation themselves, were destroyed 2,500 years ago. And what it represents in terms of a name is the antithesis of someone who deserves the land. It means foreign invader who uses terror.
And the United States embraces that.
Correct.
And promotes
so does,
that. And
so does France. So does Great Britain.
Uh-huh.
So does Germany. And collectively, God's very clear about this prophecy.
Yeah, what's how you think God's going to carry on? Come on,
God, yeah, God predicts that that Israel will ultimately be forced, either in 2024, 5, 6, 7, forced to give up the West Bank, because the world will all turn against Israel. And they'll be forced to give up the West Bank, and it's going to lead almost immediately to World War III.
Mm-hmm.
To the Magog War. And
well, that's why we study prophecy.
That's why we study prophecy. It's important not only to know what's going to happen so that you can be prepared and forearmed and forewarned, but it's the ultimate tool to deploy in garnering somebody's attention. The moment somebody begins to say, what in the world are we talking about a two-state solution? Why are we rewarding terrorists? Why are we taking the only country that's worth a damn in the entire region and trying to carve it up? Why are we against the only good country in the midst of these horrible actors? And when somebody begins to question, if there's somebody that's there to say, listen, 3,000 years ago, 2,700 years ago, this is what was written about the days that we're witnessing right now, about the news that we're reading in our newspaper. This is what was said about it. Those people who have begun to question their religion and their government and their military are going to find that there is something they can grasp hold of that is true, that is reliable, that answers their questions. And if we don't share that, who will? And if we don't share that, then what hope is there for others to join the covenant? Do you think God took all this time to share all this with us so we could just keep it to ourselves?
Of course not.
You know, are we going to be like the right-wing wackos in America that says, this is my country, the rest of you, you can't have it? You know, you stay out, all of you people with different skin colors or that speak a different language. This is my country. You just stay out of here. Are we going to be that in terms of the covenant? This is our covenant, and we don't want you because, you know, I don't want to share. No. Listen, you know, there isn't anybody that's part of the covenant that any one of us is going to say, listen, there's every aspect of that individual resonates with me. They are the perfect companion. We all have our glitches. We all have our foibles. But I'll tell you what, each of us that have joined in the covenant, we all bring something to it that makes life in it richer.
Yeah.
We are all hugely benefit. You know, you look at Roy and the contributions that he brought to us scientifically. Mm-hmm. You look at Richard and the amount that of just understanding that he brought when he was explaining how he and Christy endured so much discomfort, difficulty as a result of people acting badly and understanding what it's like to be homeless.
Mm-hmm.
I had no concept of that. To hear him tell that story, I mean, it profoundly changed the way that I view life and the world. I'm richer by that. You know, you look at someone like Larry who rubs a lot of people wrong, sometimes because of his language or sometimes because he's just
he's
uncompromising.
In
he's in your face. Yeah. But, you know, I'm just translating a passage here about this transition from Dode to Solomon. And Dode said, you know, he ain't ready yet. He's too gentle. He's too mild.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, these things make him ill-prepared. And I wrote a whole paragraph on it. It says, you know, it's always been my impression, looking at what God likes and what he doesn't like, is that he wants to have relationships with men who are men and women who are women. He made us different for a reason. He loves the difference. He wants to celebrate the difference. And the last thing he wants is a mealy-mouthed man. If you're a man, stand up. Have some backbone. He wants people that are engaged, that are willing to go out and accomplish something, committed to doing it, not afraid of the consequence of being reviled for telling the truth. You know, And so, you know, Larry's the poster child for that. I like that. God likes strong personalities. And Dode had a very strong personality. And so we're all richer by it. I mean, I don't think there's anybody that doesn't love Dode from Down Under, for example, or Frank, Don, who has created his site.
These are good guys.
Right. Or Jackie, who's committed so much time to editing this book and those that she communicates with. It's Lisa, who has had so many marvelous things to add to our company recently. Jason, who calls into this, not this program, but the evening program quite often.
Yes.
We're enriched by the number of people who participate, and the more who participate, the more exciting, the more fun eternity is going to be.
Right.
So, since the first condition of the covenant is to walk away from your country and from the babble of religion, if we don't take the time to explain why God is opposed to these things and why he is not willing to engage in a discussion or a relationship with you while you cling to these things, then what we're doing is we're leaving the world without hope. Now, I'm not saying that because we're
special.
We're not.
No.
But, you know, there's always been very few who are committed to the truth, who know the truth, who are willing to share the truth. And right now, that is still the case. There are very few. And if we don't do it, it's not going to get done. Now, it's not like we're making a sacrifice to do this. It's not like saying, well, there's no one else to go, so, you know, we'll trudge on. No, it happens to be the most enjoyable job in the world.
I find it great fun.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I never thought it'd be this much fun.
Yeah. You went and did a whole study on how Woodrow Wilson deliberately caused what was called the Spanish flu.
Yes, sir.
Bred it, gave it to Americans in Kansas, sent them off to the world, and did it knowingly and deliberately.
Right.
That's pretty disgusting stuff.
That's incredibly disgusting stuff.
Yeah. However, once you were done with it, you know, you, like me, like Larry, we're all patriots.
Mm-hmm.
And once you've done it and you find added fact, convicting fact, that demonstrates why God is opposed to all governments. My guess is you came out of it reassured, stronger, not just.
All the stuff that goes around about these guys are great and this is our system and all that, it just puts nails in all their coffins for me. I'm absolutely justified in telling you they're incredibly evil and immoral. Don't follow them. Don't listen.
Right. Yeah, they are.
It's not even close.
There's a reason that God is opposed to them.
Yeah. I never thought Christianity was as bad as I've discovered. I mean, we're going back 10 years.
Right.
But these 10 years ago, I would say there's a thread of it. I never thought it was all great as all one group anyway. But
yeah.
But I never thought it was as evil.
I would never have, it would never have dawned on me to realize the stupidity of believing that God died for my sins, that man killed God. and how just utterly stupid that was. It would never have dawned on me prior. It would never have dawned on me that there could not have been a bodily resurrection. It would never have dawned on me that every aspect of Christianity was Babylonian and pagan.
Yeah.
I would never have thought for a moment that the Trinity was pagan, that Sunday worship was pagan, that Christmas and Easter were pagan. They were not just pagan, they're Babylonian.
I knew some of those, boy.
Yeah, but I mean, after a while, you know.
To the degree, I thought somehow you could reconcile all those
things. Oh, yeah. I mean, did I know that there was a history of Ishtar and Easter? Yeah, but I said, it's just coincidence.
Yeah.
Never would have dealt with the fact that they're an absolute disgusting abomination. And more important than that, I would never have dealt with the absurdity of Paul's claim, where he claims that the God who authored the Torah, prophets, and Psalms was incapable of saving anyone, that he had admitted that what he wrote was impossible and counterproductive, and therefore he went to Paul and said, I give up. I can't figure it out. Why don't you come up with a new plan?
And it would have to be that way for Paul to be true.
Right.
I mean,
how absurd that is, how stupid that is. And you get 2.4 billion people that believe that. And you go, what's wrong with you? You know, why are people talking about a Jesus when the name was invented in the 17th century? Why are they talking about a Christ when it's based on the Greek word that's the basis of pharmacy that means to be drugged?
Be drugged. God.
What do they think he
was? Leave your brain at the door.
Do they think he was a Greek and therefore had a Greek name? How in the world do they think that they can ignore the totality of what they call the Sermon on the Mount, which is his first and longest public discussion? And where he said that the broad way leads to death, the popular way leads to death, and that if you attempt to negate any aspect of the Torah, prophets, or think that for a moment I came to annul them, it's just not true.
Well, all Christians know that about the narrowest way and few find.
Right.
Do they not know there's 2.5 billion of them?
Right. How could you be in a situation where you say, I didn't come to annul the Torah, but to fulfill it, and they think, well, that means fulfill it means to do away with it and disassociate, I did not come to do away with it. And then you think that, well, fulfill it means to do away with it. Would he just lie? Did he have a senior moment and contradict himself? Is he as disingenuous and hypocritical as you are as a religious person? I mean, it's so obvious, and yet until somebody points it out to you, maybe it isn't so. It wasn't for me until somebody pointed it out to me.
Yeah. But once you know there's, I don't care if you throw the dirt under the carpet, but once you know, turn the light on, you know the dirt's there, or you throw it under, you know it's there.
Right.
You can never defend it again.
You know, how many times did you hear Christians ponder what the thorn in Paul's side might have been?
Constantly.
And yet, Paul explains exactly what the thorn... He says exactly what the thorn in his side was.
Yeah, he tells you. I'm
demon-possessed.
Possessed.
Right. I'm demon-possessed.
How the hell can... How much room is in your soul for a demon and the set-apart spirit?
Zero.
that's quite a trick if you can pull off both of them. Well, you know, it's the representation of him. And in fact, one of the little books I was reading recently, we'll talk about maybe sometime down the road, but it's the same thing. Is they never address the fact that Yahusha's words don't compare in any shape.
Paul and Yahusha said exactly the opposite things.
Yeah.
There's nothing in common.
Nothing.
They're opposites.